Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Osio, Ginli, Tahiju, Tahigu. This is Will Bluewater, and Mark Borgening and I are going to be talking about a real special mother today. It's Mother's Day, and I figured with the 100th anniversary of the events at Fatima, Portugal in 1917 coming up, and wanted to point out that in Judaism, you know, there's a concept of a heavenly mother, and a billion people revere the Virgin Mary, Mother of God, and the Jews believe in a Shekinah. There's a feminine aspect of creator, and so I thought we call on our resident encyclopedic person, Mark Borchling. I mean, this fellow, well, without further ado, I thought we'd just launch into it and
been a while since it was just Mark and me. And so what do you think of what's going on, Mark?
Regarding what?
Oh, well, we got
other
the
stuff.
Yeah, the whole thing, the 100th anniversary, and had the two youngest children that died in 1919 were made saints this week, and the eldest, who passed away not long ago, is undergoing the process of beatification and will soon be a saint. But there were just some unbelievably remarkable events that happened at Fatima, as well as other things that that are associated with the Roman Catholic religion. And I know you know a lot about that than I do, about the Tilda and everything. So in light of what's going on, I mean, what do you think right now?
Well, I think that the message and the issues at Fatima have been were unfolding and are still unfolding, and most people, including most of the Catholics, really don't understand. And it's the message in the whole thing is actually applicable to everybody. It's not just Catholics that it affects.
That's right.
It's going to primarily relate, you know, predominantly for Catholics, in what the message of Fatima and the thing. I mean, if you look at it, what really makes Fatima stand out in terms of uniqueness, in terms of the apparitions of Mother Mary, or actually any type of apparition, is the fact that the children in advance said, you know, many months in advance, on this day, at this hour, there's going to be a miracle.
Yeah.
And they weren't exactly sure what it was going to be. All they knew is people didn't believe them. And at that point in time, it wasn't real popular for them to be sitting there saying in Portugal that, you know, they're having apparitions of Virgin Mary. That got your church shut down and you persecuted, and all kinds of bad things would happen, including beatings by your parents. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of support. And World War I was going on. And so what makes it unique is the fact that they announced in advance that there would be a miracle, and it would prove that they're telling the truth. And it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the scale of the miracle probably is biblical in terms of, you know, there hasn't been anything quite like that ever happen. It's kind of on the scale of the parting of the Red Sea, even bigger than that, actually. So it's that level of thing. And probably there's never been any kind of apparition or anything like that that had that kind of confirming miracle occur. And so that's what makes it unique. And it was the point, too, is what's important about the miracle is it is likely not just a miracle, but it's a representation of things to come. In other words, it itself is very likely part of a component of what we call the third secret of the three secrets of Fatima. So what happened? You know, October 13th, 1917, boom, it's the day. And the miracle's supposed to happen. If it doesn't happen, you know, people are saying, well, you know, the people might kill the children. You know, they may not survive. So it's, you know, it's very concerning. So it's the hour supposed to happen. It's a little bit late. It's been raining the day before, the night before. The estimates are there were at least 70,000 people there, possibly 150,000.
Right.
That is at least 10% of the nation of Portugal is there. So, you know, these aren't all Catholics. Some of these people are there specifically to disprove and say, aha, laugh at the children, write newspaper stories saying it's a fraud, you know, the church put them up to it, all this stuff, right? So it's a little bit late. There's one priest asked the children, asked Lucia, says, well, you know, when's the miracle going to start? And she said, well, it'll be a few minutes. And he says, well, it's already noon, blah, blah, blah. Everybody out of here. So Sister Lucia says, you can leave if you want, but this is our land. We're staying here. And most of the people are standing ankle deep in mud. And they're wet. You know, they're not too happy. Some of them are chanting, hey, you know, we've been deceived. But then all of a sudden, the apparition swings into place. So the children see Virgin Mary, as usual. Some of the other people could kind of see, not her, but they could see her coming in as a sphere of light. And so it's going, and people are sitting there, yeah, we want the miracle, all this. And all of a sudden, Lucia says, well, look at the sun. And all of a sudden, the rain stops, the clouds literally part, and then they could look at the sun. And the first thing that most people said that was unusual is you could look at the sun. It wouldn't burn your eyes or you wouldn't hurt your ear, nothing, right? You could look at it. That astounded them. You know, these are mountain people. You know, things like that catch their attention, right? That's what they say anyway. The next thing that happened, though, was the sun started to spin upon itself. And it started to throw off streamers of colors or something, or an outside rim or whatever. And then it started to literally move around in the sky. The peasants called it danced, the day the sun danced. It just was moving, literally moving around in the sky. And it did this, it would stop, and it would do it, start up again, and it did that about three times. Now the fourth time, it didn't do that. Probably if we saw it, they said the sun zigzagged, and it looked like it was literally going to crash on Earth. So if we were going to say it, we'd probably say it looked like the sun, either there was a massive coronal ejection, or we'd probably actually say the sun went supernova, or a major, major outburst. There were literally people on the ground begging for mercy.
Yeah.
This is it. We're dead. We're going to die. You know? And then all of a sudden it stops. Sun goes back up. Everything changes. Rain still stops. And, you know, you couldn't look at the sun. And people notice that their clothes are dry. The ground is dry.
So it was after harvest. Right, and they would have had mud all over them.
Harvest.
It's about that time.
But they were in mud, but the point. Yeah. There were some guys that analyzed it. You know, I don't know, I forget, physicists and stuff. And they said, well, to dry that ground and all that stuff in that short a space of time, the people should have been incinerated.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just something that they saw. Now there were also people that were miles away, 50 miles or so away, that also saw it. So it's fairly well documented. So all this goes over, and, you know, well, back in July, not October, because the miracle happened in October, but in July, the previous July, the children were given a secret, or three secrets. Two of them are known. One of them was supposed to be released in 1960, and it wasn't. Vatican came out and said, well, we're not going to release it, probably never will. In the year 2000, the Vatican claimed they released it, but, you know, it's pretty much known that, well, if what they released, it either wasn't the whole thing or what they released was a fraud. But
right.
It wasn't the whole story. Well, right before 1960, someone asked, well, why is this third secret supposed to be released in 1960? And Sister Lucia, the children's seer, said, well, because it will become clearer by then. Well, of course, they didn't release it. But what also happened is when John the 23rd became Pope, he just kind of sort of had it to where Sister Lucia really couldn't talk to anybody anymore. No one could see her without the permission of the Pope, and she was basically locked up under. So that's fairly unique in church history. Well, one of the things you find out is in a book called The Fourth Secret of Fatima, written by Antonio Sossi. And one thing happened, and most people aren't aware of this, is in right after, in 1958, right after the conclave that elected, supposedly elected, I should say, John the 23rd to become Pope, Sister Lucia did something she never had done before. She was going to go public. She was going to go on the radio. Well, this is completely out of character for her, because up until that point, she always went to her priest, to her bishop, went through the chain of command, right? She never deviated. So why would she do it? You know, why would she seemingly just toss all, and she was a nun, so she would toss her vows of obedience into the trash can, right? Why would she do that? She had never done anything like that before, completely out of character. Well, the reason would be she didn't have a vow of obedience anymore, because she knows the third secret. And one part of that third secret says, well, there's going to be a person become Pope, or set of people become Pope, and they're not really popes. They're the enemy. Well, obviously, if she knows that, then she knows that John the 23rd is not a valid Pope. So she has no vow of obedience. So it's perfectly acceptable to go public, which she attempted to do, which is one of the reasons they shut her up.
What year was that?
Huh?
What year was
October 1958.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's when the conclave happened. When they shut her up was a few months later, more towards December, January 1959. So we know that one of the components of the third secret, through varying different sources, concerns the Pope, the church itself, and basically to church going into apostasy. And that has happened. So that part of the message has come true already. There were components of it that actually happened before 1958, but in 1958, bingo, John the 23rd, wham. He's more than likely every pope after that has been an anti-pope. Valid. And with the starting of the Vatican II Council, that was used to leverage and completely undermine the Catholic faith. From most people that look at this point of view, you know, what's in Rome, and it's like Father Malachi Martin used to say, that's not the church, it's the institutional church of Rome. That was his way of saying false church.
Well,
so that's one component. Now, you can imagine if your sister Lucia, the other two children died like Mother Mary said they would die shortly after the apparitions, which did happen. So Lucia was the only one left, and she's in a convent, and she's a nun. Well, you know, you can imagine being asked by the church to write down the third secret, and if she's going to write it down, it says, well, and one component it is, well, the church gets taken over essentially by satanic forces and evil, and it's completely undermined, right? Well, that doesn't go over real well with the hierarchy,
yeah.
Especially if they're the ones doing it.
Yeah.
In 1958. So that's one component. That component doesn't necessarily really affect anybody that, you know, who's not Catholic. You know, why do they care, right? If they're not Catholic, who cares if the church gets taken over by evil? Well, there's only one problem. The same thing that took them over took over the Hopi and any traditional culture on Earth. They
yeah.
didn't just go after. They go after anything that has traditional values.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason that affects. Now, that doesn't mean they care about the Pope or anything, but they should care about the fact that traditional values are being attacked. So that aspect does affect them, even though the church part doesn't. The second part of the message, though, is going to affect everybody. It doesn't matter if Catholic or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we didn't know much about that. We do know that when Sister Lucia in the 1943 or something got very sick, almost died, and the message wasn't written down yet. She had never disclosed it. So her bishop says, well, you know, you're almost dying of pleurisy here, so, you know, we really want you to write down that third secret. We know the other first and second secrets, but we don't know the third one. You need to write it down. And so she struggled a little bit, and she came back and says, well, I'll write it down, but only if you order me to under a vow of obedience, right? So they said, okay, we order you to. So she still struggled, and people wondered, well, why was this so difficult for her to write down? Because other components of the message were pretty bad. You know, they involved things like whole nations disappearing from the face of the earth. So they were wondering, why was it such a struggle for her to write down this third part? Well, one part would be because it, you know, involves the church like we've discussed. But the second part of it, more than likely, and this comes again through Antonio Socci, in something that he released in 2014 in August. And he said he got access through the convent to Sister Lucia's diary, or at least some part, right? Maybe not the whole diary, but some thing that they're putting together. But this more than likely is a component of the third secret itself. And I'll just read it here, see what it says. And this is actually her, now she wrote this in Portuguese, so this is translated into English, right? But she says, I felt, this is kind of what she literally wrote in her diary, I felt my spirit flooded with the light-filled mystery, which is God. And in him, I saw and heard the point of the flame-like lamp, which detaches, touches the axis of the earth, and it, the earth, shakes. Mountains, cities, towns, villages, with their inhabitants, are buried. The seas, rivers, oceans, clouds leave their bounds. They overflow, flood, and drag with them into a whirlpool, houses and people in a number unable to be counted. It is the purification of the world. Now,
mm-hmm.
That's very interesting because that's exactly the word the Hopi use, purification. So, that is part, a component of the third secret, more than likely. At least it's in her diary entry. But she said to a Catholic priest in 1957, right before the crap hit the fan here, she said to him, she said, well, my mission really isn't to tell people about cataclysms. She says, no. She says, my mission is to warn people they are in danger of losing their soul for all eternity. So she's basically saying, well, yeah, there might be, you know, might be a lot of people getting wiped out and stuff, but so what? So, you know, there might be a little bit more at stake here than, you know, we normally think of. So, now you look at that, remember what she said, something touches the axis of the earth. Now, In the Hopi say that there's twins at each, the north and south pole. And twin warriors or the twin gods that are sitting, some of the stories they have them sitting on the top of a serpent's head, like with reins or something. And, you know, it's like Creator tells them, okay, let go a little bit. And when they do, they're kind of has earthquakes and bad weather and stuff, right? And that warns people that, you know, they better get their act together and listen to Creator and do what they need to be doing. Okay, so if they do, well, everything's okay. If they fail and people just keep screwing up and just do what the hell they want, you know, then the Hopi say Creator eventually tells the two guys, let go completely. And that's when the Hopi says the earth rolls over, you know, you freeze, all this other bad stuff happens to you. It's basically, that's it, you know, game over.
Yeah.
Your world cycle just ended. Say bye-bye. But if you look at it, Sister Lucia said something affects the axis ears. And we are already in a position of losing our magnetic field. If that field collapses and reverses, all the stuff that she said would happen. So we're right there. Now, she after 1917, a little while later, she wound up in a convent, and then she moved to another one. And at one point, she was given some further messages. One is she was told that, you know, they would need to do a consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of the Virgin Mary, and the Pope needed to do that with all the bishops, right? Well, they sort of didn't really listen too much, at least Pius XI didn't. And then Pius XII sort of tried to do it, and it never really got done correctly. So they were told, if you do this, you'll be okay. If you don't do this, if you fail, then World War II is going to happen. And Russia or the communist forces are going to spread all over the world. Well, that all that pretty much happened.
Yep.
It's also in progress. So, you know, that... And unfortunately, you know, that was now in around that same time frame in 1931, Sister Lucia was given a message by Christ, and he said, they will do this consecration, but like the King of France, it's going to be late. They're going to do it too late. Well, the reason this is significant is because the King of France was told long, you know, time ago, 100 years before the French Revolution, the King of France was told that he needed to consecrate France to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, right? Well, he didn't do it. And when the French Revolution happened, that King of France tried to do it, but it was late. And it was 100 years later, 100 years. And we're now sitting at 100 years past 1917. Now, to be fair, that doesn't mean it's all going to happen in 2017, because remember, the apparition of Jesus happened in 1931. But interestingly enough, if you go and say from 2017 to 2031, that range as a gap for that 100-year period, right, depending on where you start, if you say that the apparition of Jesus, that would be the 100-year mark, then it would be, you know, like 2031, maybe. So somewhere in here, 2017 to 2031, you know, there's a chance something can happen. Now, what's interesting about that is 2031 is going to be almost pretty much right at the end of the Mayan Ketun cycle that started in 2012.
Yeah.
And some leading experts are saying by 2030, 31, 32, right in there, we're going to be in a mini ice age, which would also be a side effect of a magnetic field reversal. Some people say it's going to be a lot worse than a mini ice age. It's going to be a full-blown reversal and a full-blown ice age, which is what the Hopi said happened. That fits with what the Hopi say as well. So, and we are already seeing that. We just lost last week in Kansas, I think, 30% of our wheat crop?
Oh, I didn't hear
Europe
that.
Europe has been losing crops. Places in Asia right now are getting way too much rain, and it's dry season. So we are already seeing some of that stuff. That's another thing to Hopi, and not just a Hopi, but other Native people talk about, you know, watch the weather. It's even, you know, even the Christians talk about that, right, in the Bible. You know, just the thing in, what, Matthew 24, where Jesus is talking about the seasons and the tree and all that. Yeah, same type of thing. So we are seeing that. We are starting to see it more and more right now. So we could lose, even a mini ice age, we could lose 30 to 50% of our food production in the world. Now think about what that means. You know, you're going to, if people think there's going to be migrations and refugees right now, the ones that are going on, imagine what would happen with a 30 to 50% food loss.
Wars.
Yeah, and of course,
2017, also the end of the Daniels timeline. And I might also interject that Joseph Smith saw this time, and he said that there would be famine because of lack of seed time and harvest.
Yeah.
So that points to weather conditions. And if you plant and it's too wet, or if you can't get in the field to plant because it's too waterlogged, and that's what Bishop Coyle said, there'd be a waterlogged situation. And so it's some strange goings on. And
go ahead.
No, I was going to say the United States turning away from God, Russia turning toward it. And it's just really, really something.
Yeah. Well, we're also seeing one of the causes of the rain and weather, we're seeing since part of March 2015 or so till about right now, we've seen about a 13% increase in cosmic radiation getting through our magnetic fields to us. That is projected over the next few years to increase to another 19% on top of the 13%. Now, when those cosmic rays come in, they also cause more rain, especially equatorial regions. They're also not do very good for us. They tend to, cosmic radiation tends to poke holes in us. It's probably one of the reasons that the Hopi went underground. If you're underground, you stay warmer, and you're not getting hit by radiation.
Yep.
So there's good reasons to be underground. All those things are things people watch, keep an eye out on, and also the radiation and the loss of magnetic fields, our fields are operating at the same frequencies as human brainwaves, delta, theta, and all that. So, as they weaken, does that have some kind of effect on us? Is that part of, like when the Hopi say, people literally become mindless? That's one of the things they say. They say people just lose it. They become mindless. They just walking around, will fall in ditches, fall off a cliff, or whatever.
Zombies, yeah. Of course, you can see that on the evening news any night.
Well, yeah. If we look around, and we look at the news or the way people are behaving or acting, and it's getting to be lunacy. I mean, they're nuts.
Oh yeah.
And it's just every year when you don't think it's going to get worse, it gets worse. So yeah, and it'll probably be that, there will be people that somehow are able to maintain and probably have a strong enough connection to Creator to resist all this and get through it. But they're going to be watching everything go around them falling apart and going nuts.
Yeah.
Which will not be a real easy thing to go through, So
maybe that tinfoil hat will come in handy.
Well, it's what the Hopi said. They said that at one point, one of their stories, they said they were told that they needed to leave, move, and during the day they would see a cloud and follow it. And you see the little cloud symbols they use all the time. And then during the night it would become a star. And they follow it night and day, night and day. They just keep following it until it stops. When it stops, they stop. So they did, and told their neighbors. Of course, some of their neighbors listened. Most of them didn't. Said, "Well, you're nuts. We're not doing that." So they laughed, and and they got to the stopping point, stopped, waited. When the last group of people got from whatever direction they came in from, they said this spirit being appeared and basically told them, put them, knocked on the ant people's thing and put them underground. And then all hell break loose. You know, the surface of Earth is getting literally recreated. Comes back, knocks, lets them out, right? They don't know exactly. They don't say how long they were in there. But tells them, you are now in the next world. There's only two things you need to know. Number one, you are to follow the laws of the Creator. Number two, you are to sing praises of thanks, sing praises every day to the Creator. If we don't hear you singing those praises, we know you have returned to evil, and we're going to come back and do this all over again. Recreate the face of the earth and wipe everything out. And that'll be the next world cycle, right? So, now they also say, though, that what made some of these people possible for them to understand this message and where to go, what to do, is they said that you had to keep an open door. The Christians would say that's a connection through the Holy Spirit. You had to listen to that and do what you're told. And that's basically what the Hopi said. That's how they got there. That's how they knew what to do. They don't say Holy Spirit necessarily, but, you know.
Right.
They say keep an open door. That's the way to say it. Some people believe that open door is literally the third eye or the pineal gland, that is a major connection point in people. This is actually may show up in the Bible, too. Cause I forget where it is in the Old Testament. It talks about a golden bowl and a silver thread. And that would be, the golden bowl would be the around the pineal, and the silver thread would be the energy thing connecting into it. Which some of the people, when they go out of body or have near-death experiences, they can say, they can see when they're floating around out there, the silver thread connects back into their body, right into their head, right there. So there is something to that. But they say that's how you'll know. So probably, and that's one of the things that we've, you know, I think you and I have stressed on the show, is to maintain your connection with Creator. Maintain the open door the Hopi talk about, or Christian point of view, the connection to the Holy Spirit.
Because Abraham said, you always keep your tent door open, you know, to welcome visitors, you know, seen and unseen.
Yep. Yeah, but you also have to, you know, you don't wait till last minute to do this because, you know, there might be something where you're told to do something and you might literally just have seconds to do it. You aren't going to be able to sit there and think, well, is this true? Is this accurate? Is this really happening? And, you know, think about it. You may have to do something relatively quickly. So it's something to practice right now and get to where you got it down so you can, you know, you have the confidence and trust in it right now, not in the moment when things are getting rough. You know, that's not the time to be trying to practice. So you want to practice in advance.
Yeah.
So,
parable of the 10 virgins, yeah.
So I think that's where the whole message of Fatima. Now, the other thing that was interesting about the Fatima story is the fact that the children, the two children were told, Francisco and Jacinta, the one that just got canonized as saints, that they would die soon. You know, and they did. But what is interesting about them is how they dealt with it. They weren't worried at all. After the apparition, they came home and told, "Hey, Mom and Dad, we saw Virgin Mary." And she said, "Well, we're going to die soon." So you can imagine what their parents thought, right? Wow, this is not good. This sounds more evil than good if you're told you're going to die. But they didn't seem to be worried about it at all. They actually seemed to be looking forward to it.
Yeah, after what they've been through with persecution, yeah.
Well, this was even before that. And they were, I mean, at one point, you know, when the one guy, the mayor of Orem or whatever, he was trying to pry the third secret out of them, tried to bribe them, and they didn't go for that. And then he said, well, you know, we're going to lower you inch by inch into a vat of boiling oil until your skin and flesh comes out of your... And, you know, they thought he was really going to do it. And but they didn't say nothing. He said, well, what do we care if you kill us? We're just going to go to heaven sooner. But they also displayed another interesting thing. They displayed a willingness, and you got to remember they were like 7 and 9 years old. They displayed a willingness to go through suffering and all these things for the benefit of other souls. They were asked to do that, and they did. And it got interesting. Now, Francisco was the first one to die. When he died, he said he saw some kind of light coming in, and he heard some music, and his mother and a few other people could actually hear the music. I don't know if they saw the light or not, but so he said, well, you know, Mother Mary's coming to get me. And bingo, he's gone. Jacinta, on the other hand, she was given a choice. She was told she could leave, die right now, or she could stay on Earth longer and suffer some more. And Jacinta chose suffering, and she did. She had a gaping wound in her chest from pleurisy and other things, and she was told, you're going to go to two hospitals, and you'll die in the second one alone. Your parents, no one will be there. And so she went to the first one, which is in a convent, an orphanage, and run by some lady, I think Mother Godino or something like that. And, you know, sometimes people would come in and Jacinta would say, don't sit there right there in that corner of the bed there. That's Virgin Mary's going to come in there. That's her spot. But Jacinta was always also telling them things like, this one doctor, well, your doctors aren't, you're in trouble. You're not doing the right things. You don't really care about your patients, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. Imagine what she'd say about the doctors today. This is doctors back then, which were probably not doing too bad. And one doctor, she said, you're not going to be around much longer, and neither is your daughter. And that happened. And she said this to several different people. Basically, everything she said occurred. So she seemed to have an uncanny ability to predict things, and say she actually. And she said right before 1940, that's when the war is going to start. And she also said the things that would happen in Spain and in Lisbon. And Spain, right before World War II, they had this big Spanish war over there in Spain, right? So she said all that stuff. She was. I forget what year she was dug up, and they found out her body was incorrupt.
Yeah.
She hadn't decomposed. So, which is not a requirement for sainthood, but there have been some saints that were found to be incorrupt. You know, so, but
even
she
smelling like flowers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think Catherine Labrador or whatever, I think she was incorrupt, and several of them were. But Jacinta was too, and she had other visions of a pope, and it was obvious that something bad was happening. He was like in some house, church or something, his hands on his face, and just like, oh my God, and said there was just, you know, roads full of people that were starving and stuff. Now, it is possible to interpret that as World War II. That's a possibility. Or it could not be World War II. It could be another future event, too. So, but they definitely, the message that they had was definitely accurate and verified by the Miracle of the Sun, which, remember, what happened back at that Miracle of the Sun? You could look at the sun. It's dimming. Okay? We are now going into a grand minimum phase of the sun. So it's dimming. It moved. in the sky. Okay, if we had a something where a magnetic field collapsed and then our there was nothing holding our tectonic plates in place as much, then we could see a massive crustal displacement. If that happened, you're standing and you're looking outside and you're looking up the sun, it could look like it's moving around in the sky, just like what they saw.
Right, and then, like the earth reeling to and fro like a drunken...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Literally not spinning and just kind of reeling.
And then the part... Remember, they saw this happen three times, and then the fourth time, it looked like it was going to crash into Earth. Well, that could be a supernova type of outpulsing type event. It could be a massive CME, like Ed Dame's kill shot thing, something like that. But
Planet X.
It could be. It's a possibility. It could be triggered by that. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Think it has, I don't think there. I don't think there has to be a Planet X for any of this to happen, though. It could be a triggering agent, but I don't believe it has to be there. It's possible it could be, but I don't believe it's required. But remember, something happened with the sun four times. And the Hopi have something where they say, something happens with the sun four times.
Mm.
Now, they didn't describe it exactly identically the same way, but it was pretty similar. So it may be that the Fatima event may have actually matched what the Hopi were saying. Now, the other
mm-hmm.
thing is, the children at the August apparition were kidnapped, so they couldn't be there. They were told if that wouldn't have happened, that the October miracle would have been bigger. In other words, it may have been visible not just in Portugal, but it may have been visible possibly even worldwide. Imagine if that would have happened.
Yeah.
So that's I think it's very likely that that miracle of the sun isn't just a miracle. It's actually a visual, experiential representation of the other part of the third secret, where you have purification. Only next time people see it, it's going to be the real deal. It's not going to just kind of go away and everything's okay.
Yeah.
Back then. So.
And that's pretty much what Grandfather Lee over at Manitaka, in his vision, very similar. He said mm-hmm. that it would be quick and it'd be over very quickly, and that you'd just wake up in a new world.
Yeah. It could be. I don't know. It could go pretty quickly. That's true. The thing they think is our magnetic fields prior, I don't know how many years ago, they believe over the last how many thousand years they declined about 50 to 65% somewhere in there. Okay, so
wow.
We took another 13% hit just in the last year and a half. And we're projected that in the next couple of years, we're projected to take another 19% cosmic rays, which I interpret to be roughly maybe a 19% decline in magnetic field. Maybe it's not exactly the same percentage, but maybe close. If that's true, you got 13 plus the 19, that's what, 32%? Plus
yeah.
50 or 65. So let's say 50, that gives you 32, 50, that's 82%. They believe
wow.
that a magnetic reversal can start to occur at about 85% decline in the magnetic field.
Well,
so that would possibly indicate that in the near future sometime we could be seeing it.
GPS would go down and probably battlefield weapons would be impossible. There's all kinds of implications to all this. Anything
well,
digital?
Remember what she said in her diary. The oceans, the land
mm-hmm.
and sky leave their bounds. In Fulda, Germany, in I think 1980-something, John Paul II was asked in Fulda, Germany by some
mm-hmm.
traditional Catholics about the third secret. He said, well, if oceans overflow on the land and from one second to the next millions are dead, well, do you really
yep.
want to know about it? Well, that's
yeah.
just one component. See, if your crust displaces, what your ocean's doing. And not only can your crust displace, parts or sections or big sections even could liquefy. They talk about this in the Cascadia subduction zone up there on the northwest coast of the United States. That it's overdue.
And in Salt Lake Valley, too.
And they say that your ground can literally liquefy. So imagine if you had ground liquefying, or just say sinkholes or whatever you want to call it, something that literally just swallows up cities. You know, they're off the, and maybe entire half of a state, possibly.
And
I mean, this could
and you know, in the Old Testament, that was the punishment for questioning God's laws and his prophet. That's exactly what happened to that bunch. You remember what happened? I can't remember the name of the right off the top of my head because, they were challenging Moses' authority. He says, okay, you'll meet me tomorrow at a certain place and time, and the earth literally opened up and swallowed him.
Yeah,
that's a specific penalty for, you know, for being so disobedient.
Well, yeah, I mean we're potentially staring us right in the face right now. So, what you and I have been talking about as one of the major points over a few years now is, you know, get your connection with the Creator, you know, follow the laws of the Creator, and like the Hopi said, whether we're told by that spirit being, this is the next world, only two things you need to know, and you're going to be okay. Follow the laws of the Creator, sing praises, give thanks to the Creator. You do that, you're going to be okay. You don't do it, we know you return to evil. We're going to come back and wipe and recreate the earth again. So what's the solution? The solution is to do those two things. So anybody listening to the
pretty
show,
simple.
Do those two things. Follow the laws of the Creator.
Simple.
Wake up in the morning, say, thanks, God. You know, thank you for what I got, my food, whatever I have, my friends, my relatives, my relations, and have that attitude and live that way. And what is that going to do? That's going to open the door so you can hear the messages and know what you need to do.
Well, Mark, you're a preacher of righteousness.
I just stumble on all this stuff, so I figure if I learn it, you know, what good is it if I don't share it? And your show provides
that
opportunity.
What tradition were you raised in as a child?
I wasn't. I wasn't raised in anything.
Okay, so you had
We didn't go to church. I go to a traditional Catholic church now, but we're not in communion with Rome the way they say.
Right.
Or full communion. So there are traditional Catholics. Just like there's traditional
Mexicans. The Mexican National Catholic Church is not the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And
now it turns out.
Oh, yeah.
I learned about the Hopi first, because the Hopi had the traditional Hopi, and then they had the what they called the progressive Hopi, or the guys running the tribal council.
BIA.
Then. Right after I saw that, I'd already been married in the Catholic Church with my wife, and then I started finding out there's traditional Catholics. And I started reading what the traditional Catholics were saying and what the traditional Hopi were saying. In many cases, they were saying almost exactly the same thing.
So, for example,
the Hopi, traditional Hopi, they were saying, well, you know, you have to have an honorable way of living. You have to do all the right things, follow the law, do all this. But they mentioned things like, well, the traditional Hopi said when they saw the women's dress go above the knee, they made a big deal about that. And I thought, why do they care about that? They're Indians. Why should they care? And they said, no, that devalues the sacred femininity, and that's bad. Yeah. Well, the traditional Catholics said the same thing. They noticed the same thing. The children, these traditional Hopi and traditional Catholic, and I think there's other traditional cultures as well that started
the jihadis. the jihadis certainly notice it.
So they notice,
you know,
that,
and you know, they're right about some things. You know, that professor down in Australia that I talked to a few months back, and he's written a lot on the subject, and he came to the same conclusion I did, and they're right about some things, but you know, it's just like in Ezekiel, you know, where the Assyrians go to war with the Egyptians. That never happened. That's a type and a shadow of something to come, and then they would defeat you know, God's people, then they would boast of it, and then they're destroyed overnight. So there's so many things coming in, and
also you mentioned at the beginning of the show about how the Virgin Mary ties in with other cultures as well, but there's a couple that you missed. Like, for example, there's two or three, probably more, Lakota elders that say the White Buffalo staff woman is the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
They specifically say it. Hold on.
Yeah, Frank Fulsgrove had two funerals, I understand. Traditional Lakota and a Catholic ceremony. They had a lot of respect for the religion. And, I know some people here in where I live that they haven't converted, but they do attend the Catholic Church, and because they just feel that pull. And I've thought about it a time or two, because that's where the there's quite a few Hispanic people here, and so they have quite a bunch of them, and never had a chance to go. You know, Linda's health's not that good, and it's hard to get out. But these are sure some good things to think about. Yep, especially on Mother's Day and Sunday, and so we'll go forth prayerfully, I guess, and
watch our P's and Q's. The children were said that one of the things that's been given to us by Creator to help us in these times, they said, was a devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, or you could say Immaculate Heart of White Buffalo Cavalryman, or whatever you want to fill in the blank with. Now, this has been actually tested already and proven. And they said if you do that, that'll help you. But in a book that I have, it's a very 1945. It's called More About Fatima. It's old. And this is not very well known. But it says, I'm gonna read it here. It says, by the pontifical decree of April 28th, 1914, the Holy See had definitely fixed the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary for the day after the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus for every diocese and country that would ask it of Rome. In 1919, the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus fell on Friday, June 27th. By an invisible design of Providence, the peace which would put an end to World War I was signed the following day. It was precisely Saturday, June 28th, 1919, the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Ended World War I.
Wow. Amazing.
Which is what she told the children. She says, in the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph over evil.
Have you corroborated, have you ever correlated the date of the miracle of the sun with what was going on in the Mayan calendar that day?
Yeah. I'll put it this way. It has something to do with your birth. Not
You're
on
kidding. 9-8? Oh,
not
really?
Not on 9-8, but your birth in the 6th sun, Zolkin. Your birth in the 6th sun, Zolkin, matches, if you do the date of the October 13th, 1917, Fatima Miracle of the Sun, in the Mayan calendar, what that day is, I believe it's an 11 ebb. R-E. Let me double check that. Let me pull it up here real quick, make sure. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. But, so if you took that date, let me do it here. I'm running it real quick. I'm pretty sure I'm right. But, so if you look at that, yeah, it's an 11 ebb. Day 232.
And this is the October. This is
October 13th, 1917.
And then maybe we can look and see what this October the 13th date is.
Well, if we look up your birth, not in the Mayan Zolkin, but in the sixth sun Zolkin, on one of the time flows, your birth is on 11 ebb, the same as the miracle of the sun symbol. So your birth is connected across the two Zolkins to that miracle of the sun.
So it's Quetzalcoatl, but that's his birthday.
The 11 ebb occurs in the eek cycle. It's the 11th day of the eek cycle. So there's your eek again. So,
wow.
I think it was on the backward flow of time in the sixth sun that your 11 ebb shows up. That's connecting into the Fatima miracle of the sun. So your birth has a definite connection. It bridges between the two Zolkin on the exact same glyph, day number and glyph, as what occurred in the miracle of the sun.
So this spring and summer and early fall would be a good time to get out on the hill and do a vision quest.
Yeah. Now the other thing that's interesting on Fatima, a number, a very important number, and this has shown up in one of the Hopis that I talk with, is from May 13th, when the first apparition occurred, till October 13th, 1917, which the last apparition occurred, is a 153-day interval. That number is a very significant number in a lot of different ways. One way, it's the exact number of Hail Marys that's said in a rosary. But it's also a number that's very important to one of the Hopi elders. And it is a number that in the sixth sun Zolkin, day 153 carries a certain meaning. And its meaning is the seventh, it's 17 piece, the 17 is never-ending love, and peace. So never-ending love and peace is what day 153 in the sixth sun Zolkin calendar says. So it is showing that this thing with the 153 and the rosary and Mother Mary and the Fatima sequence of days 153, all those things are connecting on that. It will actually literally connect back to everybody's conception. Because if you look at sacred geometry, this connects into the Bible. If you look in the Bible in the book of John, I think it's chapter 22, 21, something like that. It's the last chapter, I think. It's where Jesus is telling them to cast their net, right? And it says that, you know, it gives you the exact number of fish that they catch. And it's 153.
Oh, yeah.
Now, 153 can also be seen at your conception, every human conception, when the cells split. It's in a form of sacred geometry called a vesica piscis. So if you take a circle, and then you took a second circle, and you have the two circles intersecting each other so they form a fish shape. And the distance in tradition for that sacred geometry, for the radius of that circle, is 153.
Oh, my.
So that number has a lot of significance. It's making an awful lot of connections. They're, I think, very important. So, and to this one particular Hopi elder, one time I remember when I mentioned that number 153, or I think actually he mentioned it to me. He asked me, I think he mentioned it to me first. He said, "What's this number 153 mean? It keeps coming to me."
So oh,
I start telling him.
Wow.
Yeah. It will also help form the Hopi handshake or a knockwatch symbol. Because if you look at that symbol, mm-hmm. you can make that symbol by two half circles that are overlapping into each other. Which if you completed mm-hmm. those circles, it will form a Vesica Pisces of two intersecting circles.
Wow.
So it'll also connect into that.
What do you hear from Hopi? Anything recently?
Not much, no. Mm-mm. Been pretty quiet, actually. They're pretty careful. I mean, the biggest thing that actually happened was the time that this one particular, same guy that told me, asked me about the 153. And I was talking when I said something, and I mentioned that the missing corner of the Fire Clan tablet had the twins and symbolized a magnetic field reversal. And he basically said his reply was, you know it. And he did this publicly. He didn't just say it to me. He said it to other people. So he acknowledged, it's very strange for him to acknowledge it even in private to you, they might not. But to actually publicly acknowledge it was pretty unusual for a thing for him to do. He had never done anything like that before. So that was, I was kind of caught off guard by that. So
that's, man, that's something.
So in other words, what's on the missing corner of the Fire Clan tablet, it probably directly relates to Fatima.
Wow.
And to
that's unbelievable.
The Book of the Apocalypse and Matthew 24 and certain things in the Old Testament and some of the other things you've talked about. Yeah.
Wow. How cheery. Hey, you know,
well,
we get a do-over, you know, we'll just come back and try it again. What more can you do?
Well, according to Hope, we get, what, 5 more chances?
Yeah,
depending
yeah.
on how you
and,
came So,
and
but,
going
know, again,
into, yeah.
for people right now, what we've been telling people about, maintain your connection to Creator, do that, do it. Get on the ball, and once
That's
you
right.
take care of yourself, what Sister Lucia says, once you get your own house in order, then your next job is to help the others on your path. That's what Sister Lucia
right.
said in 57. So I would say what she said is probably good advice.
Well, look, we've both got mamas waiting for us. We probably ought to go.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Mark. All right.
Take care.
We'll talk
good
to
night,
you all, everybody.
Everybody,
next week. Hey, thanks.
All right.
Good night now.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many.